So we are very thrilled to have you for this event. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming up. And this is our first in-person Upbuild event that we've had since the pandemic. So there is a significance. We really exist to bring community together. We are so much loving to be together and to create what we call Sangha in Sanskrit, the company of like-minded persons who are advancing, growing, spiritually developing. And we've missed that opportunity to be together in this way. But over the course of the pandemic, we've been very fortunate to maintain a certain spirit, a certain momentum, and even discover many new things and new persons as part of the Upbuild community through the online medium. And this is really an evening to celebrate being in person, back together. Many of you also meeting for the first time in the flesh, which is very exciting for us. And we're so deeply honored. We are also deeply honored that we have, as part of this celebration, very, very welcome guest, Satchinandana Swami, who is, I will introduce in a moment, but very dear to us at Upbuild. So the way this will work, the subject is, as you can see here, doubts about a spiritual reality. So if you have any doubts that there is a spiritual reality, you've come to the right place. Whether you are completely new to any spiritual practice or path, or whether you've been, like me, traversing a spiritual path for, well, now well over a decade, it's been about 16 years, you may still find there are some doubts. And this is a time where we can hopefully address and face some of those doubts with the wisdom of someone who has done that in his own life very expertly, as far as I'm concerned, as I've seen. So the format will be that Satchinandan Swami will give a talk, and he will, at around 7:45 roughly, bring us into an experience where we'll have some meditation. There will likely be some musical meditation as well. So we want to also not just speak about this spiritual reality, but try our best to tap into it. Of course, we also do that by speaking about it, but some experience that will anchor it even further. And then we will open it up at about 8 o'clock for Q&A. And so we'll have roughly half an hour to do Q&A. If you have any questions on the subject for Satchinandan Swami, that is a very good time. And then we'll serve a dinner of spiritually sanctified food at 8:30. So you can make your way to the back where there will be food at that time. And also, Satchinandan Swami will be here to answer any questions, to meet you. So this is also a chance to connect with him personally as far as possible. Does that sound good? Wonderful. So the culture of learning that we always ask for is three things. And those of you who've been with us at Upbuild programs, you know we really love to hammer this home. It makes such a huge difference. So what we ask for is your full-hearted participation, your undivided attention with your hearts, your respect to create a safe and sacred space together. We are all co-creating that. And your determination. And this is really important because it's easy to come together and feel like, oh, that was such a wonderful time. But what happens after? Do we want it to just remain something that was pleasurable and maybe spiritually beneficial, for sure? But to get the maximum benefit, we need some determination to come in with an intention that I want to walk out changed in some way, that there's something that I've been given that I want to keep with me that will make me different from when I walked in here. There will be jewels of realization that are being offered. Let's mine them. Let's make that our intention to mine them and keep them. So your full-hearted participation, your respect, and your determination is what we ask. By a show of hands, are we good with that? Ready? Yes? Thank you. So Satchinandan Swami is a bhakti yoga practitioner for more than 50 years and has been a monk also for so many decades. He is incredibly experienced in meditation and also the form of meditation that's called kirtan. Those of you who are familiar with the yoga scene, you may know musical meditation, kirtan. We'll get a taste of that this evening. And he travels around the world sharing what he has learned on this path. And he is my personal guru and a guide to upbuild. We are here by his grace, really, by his guidance. And we're so, so thankful that he is with us and in person. So with that, I will turn it over. You can just give a nice warm welcome to Satchinandan. Thank you. The floor is yours.
Thank you so much. See, before I start talking about the subject matter, I must express my profound joy to see you in real person, not just little windows in the Zoom gallery. I've seen a few of you, most of you, during the built program called On the Brink of Death, I think you might remember. I also see Pamela, who gave me all these tours through the Metropolitan Museum of Art. I hope to see you, and it's very nice. I see Jai Jagannath in the back. Thank you for attending this. And also Shipalat is here, I think. And so are so many of you. Thank you very much for making the time to come and attend this program. And obviously, with a title like this for a lecture, I needed to really think about what I will present to possibly help you dissolve some inner obstacles in the form of doubts that either consciously or subconsciously hinder your progress in your own spiritual life. So thank you for coming, thank you for giving me your attention for this 45 minutes or so, which I will speak, and then I will I hope to take you into an experience that you will never forget, and that will dissolve all the doubts, even those buried deep in your unconscious mind. In other words, we will have to do a little bit spiritual archaeology to go really to the place where the doubts are residing. And let us see, we are dependent on, we need a spiritual experience, but that is not always under our control alone. Yeah, so let us all give our best, you as the listeners who create an intention, and myself and my little band who will help me to bring you in the experience towards the end of this presentation. As we monks do, we always open the space with some incomprehensible words. These are Sanskrit prayers. will speak in English to you, don't worry. You can just listen to it, and then you can, if you want, calm your mind a little so that it's receptive. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Acharine Nirvishesha Sutras have a very good take on it. They say when the soul leaves its spiritual domain and comes under the influence of the material energy, it will be covered with something that is called avidya. It is a disability to understand who we really are. Instead, we are equipped with asmita. This means a false identity. It can change, but the root of all our roles and the designs which we make for our lives is based on this asmita, this ego. It's interesting, the Sanskrit word asmita can be translated as nothing to smile about. Smita means a smile. It can be translated as a smile, and a means no smile. We further develop attachments and things which we absolutely do not like, dislikes, and the end result of what happens in the spirit soul comes into this world is abhinivesha, deep absorption. oh, I must do this, I must do that. This is a duty. The 1,000 urgent things of material life often take over. We are absorbed in them. Without going into all these five, I would like us to look a little on avidya, this disability to understand who we are. Patanjali makes it very clear what is this avidya. The eternal soul identifies itself as something that is temporary. Life in this world, which is ruled or framed by birth and death. The soul which is ananda, full of bliss, without knowing to go to Google to find out what is bliss, what is happiness. You know, the soul which is carried by an expanding type of causeless happiness, so to say, becomes nirananda, or looking for happiness. This. And then finally, there are other consequences. An example is given, because examples sometimes help us to bring philosophical points really to something. When the spark is in the fire, it dances very nicely and has qualities like light and heat. But when the spark falls out of the fire, these qualities get extracted. There's no heat and no light, there's only black. I hope you know this word. Charcoal. Is this an American word? Charcoal. Mm-hmm. You have wood and it was there dancing with the heat and the fire, and it falls out. This is charcoal, and you put it on your cloth. Yeah, you need to know how to get it out again. So in the same way, when the spirit or the spirit leaves the spiritual atmosphere, it comes into the material atmosphere, which is foreign to it. And as a result, the spiritual qualities, which were once inner, which were once, you know, fully manifested, they go. They are extracted. We become adopted to the new atmosphere in which we are, and then we have doubts. Is there really a spiritual reality? It's almost like the charcoal is asked, is there something like dancing in the fire? I don't remember. I have forgotten. So what I want to say is doubts, to have doubts in the spiritual reality is absolutely normal. You are not the only ones with mixed emotions about spiritual life and spiritual reality. And I have a surprise to you. These doubts can revisit you even when you are in the spiritual path and you come a little bit under the material influences again. Then all of a sudden you think different and you perceive different. And then you think, I've seen dying monks who at the deathbed ask, is there really a supreme being? And more so, is there more than just this body which is paining and which is soon dying? Yes, and the material, when the atmosphere or the influences get overwhelming, even someone who trained to have access to the spiritual reality was carefully opened a tunnel, so to say, a pathway, can all of a sudden ask such questions. So I want to say this to make you feel comfortable and maybe to help you also to confidently face these doubts, to admit that you have them and that you could have them, Fine. This is the first thing which I would like to tell you. I would like to now, well, we could go in many ways. There's an ancient story in one of the Upanishads about a king. Not a king, a normal merchant actually. Not everyone has to be a king. He goes into the forest to find wells, that means roots or things that are buried under trees, you know, maybe gold and so on. And while he walks, he suddenly comes to a trap. It's an abyss which is covered with some sticks and some grass on top. He doesn't see it and he goes and falls down. Down, 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 until he lands in a network of plants which have been made to capture his fall. The fall was so long and everything was so traumatic that he completely lost his memory. When he wakes up, he finds all kinds of people around him who put some straw in his nose and ears and make their investigation. Finally, one of them nods. He is found to be worthy. So they take him and they make him the next king. He is totally forgetful of his previous existence, his wife, his children, his business. He's dressed with a miniskirt of attractively looking bones. Not for us maybe, for our taste, but New Yorkers could maybe get into it. You see all kinds of things on the street. There you go. Why?
Yeah, why not?
Didn't think of such an outfit, but let's be tolerant. So, and he by and by learns the language of these people who live in this down there, and he becomes adapted to the new atmosphere. He rules his new tribe, and everything looks all right to him until his brother finds him, who has also gone the same path. He went in the forest to look for his elder brother, then fell in the trap. But he didn't forget, he didn't lose his memories. He's kept there as a slave. So one day the brother sees his elder brother dressed in this charismatic dress of the king. And he goes, "Brother, how do you look?" Brother recognizes the language, something gets through to him. He tells his minister, "Bring him to me." And in the language of the, let us say, the abyss dwellers. And yes, I will make the story very brief. A younger brother visits the older brother, and slowly, slowly in the talks, he wakes up from his amnesia, but he's not willing to go with his younger brother until the younger brother finds out that he has only 3 more months to live. His term ends 2 years, and that's in 3 more months. And then these abyss dwellers will boil him alive and will eat him in the belief that special power comes into them if they eat their king. So the younger brother found that out and he tells, it's not safe here, come with me. And why is it not safe here, says the older brother, I'm king. Come with me, I will bring you to the place of the old kings. And they go there and they see strewn across the yard, next to these boiling pots, bones, and the young brother says, that's your destiny here with your so-called kingship. And the older brother wakes up and says, let's go, brother. And they escape. So, yes, we also, when we fall from our spiritual, the spiritual level, and by the way, that doesn't have to be something like the original fall, which we have learned maybe in our Christian traditions, that we fall from a spiritual world. That's also there. I was talking about this. But this can happen when you fall from the spiritual level of perception, where you come under the influence and you forget the spiritual reality and exchange it for this avidya, this ignorance of yourself and the ego and the attachments and the dislikes and the whole losing the point when you are totally swallowed up by the stress and hectic of your constructed life. Oh. So, yes, my dear everyone, what is the way out then? How can you solve this dilemma? And I will say very simply, you need an experience of the spiritual reality, an experience which helps you to remember what you have forgotten. An experience speaks louder than volumes of wisdom texts. An experience speaks louder than all the doubts which are put into our brain by others. An experience speaks louder than your doubts. And it speaks more convincingly because it gives you something that is something that your soul has not forgotten. Something that you desperately crave for. I once wrote a poem. When you see me crying tears, and you ask me, why are you crying? I will give my tears other names, but in reality, I'm crying only for you, although I will give my tears other names. Yes, the craving of the soul cannot be satisfied with the pleasures of the world. Spiritual, and we look for these type of pleasures which the world cannot give us, but which the world cannot take away from us. This is what a spiritual person is a little, feels a little stirring in his soul, knows and feels. So yes, spiritual experience. I would like to address two doubts. Is there a soul? Is there God? And would say how for me a spiritual experience has answered this question in a most satisfactory way. I shared with you something in the on the brink of death episodes. May I just have a quick show of hand? Who of you has been in that episode where I talk about how I left my body in that quaint hospital in South Germany? Okay, that's maybe 1/4 of you. So I will briefly summarize it again. I was being rolled, I will skip all the talk before, on one of these rolling beds into the surgeon's room of a hospital in Waldkirchen, that's a German town. I remember how the anesthetist from Lund, Sweden, said to me in Swedish, "You won't feel a bit." I said, "That, let me trust you." So I was brought. I was brought under the narcotica. Had started to work. I had been gotten a first injection while I was in my room to calm me down. I had said, "I'm not a hero on the surgeon's table. Give me enough, please." And then this anesthetist had put a few things in my veins, one on the left, one on the right arm. And yes, the next thing I knew it was a terrible pain in the belly. They had to cut open my belly for a surgery here. Oh, I felt it. First I was reminded of Chinese torture. You know, they know how to do it over days and you don't die. And so on. In the old times, I think maybe it's forgotten knowledge now. I don't want to say anything bad about any country. So, and I tried to lift my hand, or it didn't work any longer. I remembered, okay, let's be now a little scientific. The intention to lift the hand has to come first, intention, will. Then how do we do this? I have to somehow put this into the nerve system, I guess. But I don't really know how to do this. This is done automatically. Lift the hand, it didn't work. I heard the people talking. And the pain became so excruciating, so bad, that I thought I would get maddened. And finally, I felt no pain. I was floating in the atmosphere. I looked down, and there was my body. A moment later, I remember this, Dr. Bauer, he was a chief surgeon, told to his colleague from Lebanon, "And when you do golf, you know, for the white hole, you just go like, zoom, you make." And I remember he talked, I was a little, and all of a sudden, boom, I saw blood coming out of that open wound. Dr. Bauer had been a little bit absent-minded and had just cut one of the main arterias in the, and it was coming like a fountain, and everyone said, I don't remember the conversation afterwards. There was panic in the surgeon's theater, and I said, "My, oh my God, there's so much blood coming." And I see all this, and I said, "No wonder I don't even look when someone puts an injection in the left arm or right arm. I cannot watch this. So let me go from here." And just upon wanting to go, I left, but not through the door. I left through the wall. And I was still floating. Okay, I said. In the waiting room is Agni Dev, that monk friend of mine, whom I have requested to pray for me while the surgery went on, just in case. So let me check if he actually prays or if he is asleep. Because he goes very, he gets up very early for his altar services. So now remember, my dear people, this, you can't forget this, how you move somehow by your willpower. That's the only way I can explain it. And you know everything. I know staircase up, left, right, you know. Hospitals can be big. And zoom, I'm there. And there's Agni Dev. And he is not asleep. He prays. So I'm a little bit playful by nature. There are playful monks, that is not a problem. So I thought, well, let me leave a sign with him. Let me just kick that vase on the table over. Then he may, and then I tell him afterwards that it was me. I wanted to do this, but then I thought, this is not the time to be playful, Sachinanda Swami. Be serious, this might be the end of your life, and you want to go here with a few ghostly experiments. This is not the right time. Come down, gentlemen. Okay, I get it. But I felt so joyful and so like my natural self. I was not so worried any longer, because I lived outside my brain and outside my body. I was fully alive. My playfulness had not even left me. So, good. Okay, what do we do now? No playfulness now, I get it. We go back to the surgeon theater, and I built it, and it was very instant. It's not like in the movies where you see left, right, you just time is different in this zone, and space is different. And yes, and then I see the blood is under control. They have some of, you know, this was not such a big wound apparently, but big enough for the fountain of blood to start. And then I become very serious. I know this could be the end. At that moment, I see my life passing by. I see scenes of my childhood. I see a red house in an ocean of snow, our holiday house in Sweden. I see myself utterly bored in the school. I see all the scenes of my life pass by in a quick succession, and I know this is this has been reported in many books. You see a film of your life, and I start to pray, my dear Lord, you know I've tried to dedicate my life to you. Whatever happens now, I place in your hands. Please be with me. Let everything go according to your plan. And at that moment, my dear everyone, I see the Lord who I have worshipped before me. He smiles, but he is also a little... almost like a little, don't you know? You know, a little, I can't find the English word. What he communicates is, don't you know I'm always with you? And one thing, no need to panic. This is not the end. I have just shown you something so that you know you're the entity that exists separate from the body and the mind. You know, you can tell people about it, And you will, you have important work to do. You will come back. This is not the end. Don't panic. It was almost with a little smile, you know, like this. I can only say like, not like you think. It's easy. It will be easy. So the next thing I wake up is I'm rolled out of the surgeon theater, and there is that anesthetist from Lund, from Sweden, who says, "Didn't I tell you, you wouldn't feel a thing?" And I'm too tired to argue with him. And I think, if you would know, but I just was allowed to see, but. At another time, I will want to sleep now. I cannot talk now. So yes. A doubt was taken away, or a certain certitude was given by a direct experience. That's my point. A spiritual experience that has clarified the doubt. And it stays with me. I can never deny this. I can only remember it, and I have nothing to do. I could now talk. Well, I think I put everything in one. Also, I don't doubt that there is the Lord whom I worship, and so on. He has told me something. This is real, and the whole experience. I did this double check. Because I knew maybe in times to come I would have to talk to people who would have their various explanations for this. I met Dr. Bauer afterwards, 2 weeks. He had to look at the wounds, if it was healing. And he looked at me and he said, "Do you want to talk to me about something?" I said, "Why?" "Well, we had to do a second surgery on you. Something did not work all right in the first surgery." He was very careful. He didn't mention his golf playing. And I said, "Why do you not talk about the truth?" He went pale. You know, I come from North Germany, and we've talked very directly, and if you hear some direct talk, understand it's a cultural speciality which you hear. So I said to him, "You were talking about golf, and you talked about, I forgot this, there's a certain, I knew it at that time, this is a certain beat, you know, the long distance." Said, "No!" I said, "Yes, and the sound of your no betrays you." I can tell it. He was adamant, because you can get fines for this as a surgeon. Then, 4 weeks later, I came to him, and this time I asked, "Do you want to talk with me about something?" He said, "How do you know?" I said, "I left my body. I was out of my body for some time. I was there." "Where were you?" "Well, I was in the waiting room." "Did you look at the waiting room before you came here?" "No. I came directly to meet you. I didn't have to wait. I had an appointment. I was not in any waiting room in this hospital, and you know it." "You will not find me." I said, "Why should I? You did your best." And then he said, "Is there life beyond the brain and the death and everything?" I said, "I have a book for you." "But I'm a leader." read in the second chapter. The first, you don't really need to know at the first run. Read the first, second chapter. We hear, for the soul there's never birth nor death. Nor does it ever cease to be when it has come into existence, and so on. And your Dr. Bauer became a reader of the Bhagavad Gita after this. It was a shocking experience for him. And so, yes, a spiritual experience. My dear everyone, this is what you need. A spiritual experience comes usually by a practice called sadhana. Sadhana, sat, there's a word sat, eternal, the eternity. And the sadhana has certain practices which you do every day. And they, the sadhana then, let me say, the spiritual practices which you do have in them an inherent spiritual potency, which is described as taraka and paraka. Taraka means it frees you from this amnesia, this doubts, and paraka shakti means it pulls you to another reality and the perception of the reality. These two energies are embedded in the spiritual practices which you do, in the sadhana which you do. And when you build up a sadhana, you have to build it up, do it regularly, in other words, then you will all of a sudden, then you will have these spiritual insights, these realizations, and you also somehow feel how this inert spiritual longing is awakened, and your spiritual brilliance, your spiritual qualities are are coming forth. Let me give you an example which brought me in trouble in the south of North America, Florida. So I will give this example, and I've learned from my mistake, I will give it, but it's given in the Vedanta Sutra, Pungshat Vat, it starts. It means, just like there is virility in a little boy which is not yet manifest, in the same way, there is spiritual potency within all of us which may not be manifest at the moment. However, by the appropriate spiritual practice, this spiritual potency is giving a chance to manifest. It's almost like growing up for the boy. The boy only has to grow up and then he's able to start a family. Not always, when there are not as, nowadays we hear it is increasingly difficult for couples, but that's another thing. That's too much stress and too much unhealthiness is in the atmosphere. But normally in a young boy is the ability to have a family. He just needs to grow up. And these spiritual practices, so to say, help you grow up spiritually. And at that time, these two potencies manifest in you. That is the Taraka Shakti, that come free from almost a cloud that has covered you, and the Paraka Shakti, the Shakti which is, so to say, a turning up of the volume which all of us have, that's the volume of our spiritual longing and of our spiritual interest. It becomes very pronounced, and then a very quick answers come from that spiritual reality. I will now introduce one of these powerful practices with you. I will have to secretly watch the time without you noticing it. I'm sorry, little humor is always required. Oh my God, we are over time. No problem. Because we need to make the experience.
Good.
It will be brief. We are not so much over time. I need to see. Could you follow? Not all of you, not the heads, so here's your summary. It is natural to have doubts when we are under the influence of the material energy. These doubts can be easily overcome by experiences, and the experiences are possible by spiritual practice. It's very important for me to say, you can't think yourself out of the problems in which you have brought yourself by your thinking. No. You have to have a spiritual practice that can help you to go beyond the mind and beyond the mental sphere so that you enter the spiritual. Ask yourself, what sees the world? And the answer is my eye. But is that already perception? No. What sees the eye? My mind. What sees my mind? My intelligence. What sees who or what sees my intelligence? The Atman, the spiritual soul. Who or what sees even my soul? It is the Supreme Being. So I want to guide you now into a session. It's from my new book, but I will not make advertisement for the book. Not in this sinky, sacred assembly. Very good. Are you ready to create an unerasable memory?
Yes. Yes.
Good. My English is all right. You can hear?
Yes.
I'm sorry for my voice. It is just now coming back. Let me start with some poetry, just to make you curious. There's a fragrance in a flower. There's fire hidden in wood. There's butter in the milk and sugar in the sugarcane stalk. In the same way, a discerning person from the upbuilt community, oh my God, that's an interpolation, that's not in here. In the same way, a discerning person can perceive the spiritual self that resides in the body, you know, like the fragrance in the flower, the fire in the wood, the butter in the milk. A discerning person can see the spiritual self that resides in the body. And we will try now to walk the path of discernment by a meditation. Yes. Can someone please? I'm sorry. Yes. Jagannath, you're there. Would you be so kind to come here and assist with playing cartels? As soft as you possible can, when the time comes. So here are your pair of cards. You can sit down on the chair next to Krishna. and then it's warmer. Yeah, that's all right. Not too cold.
Good.
And soft volume. What was the tune again? What? And the tonality? Sorry, I can't. Sitting bones and a little bit back, please. Why? Because we want to sit in an erect position, not like in the Western movies, you know, where the cowboys sit and put their feet on the table. We want to sit straight, really. Yes, move your head a little bit. We want to really find a relaxed position. And use your, you know, do this, please. Bring your arms up. By this, to open your chest for the breathing bell. Please put your hands on your thighs. If palms up is a comfortable position, that's good. But if you prefer to do the other way around, palms down, it also works. In this meditation, it's not so important. When you're ready, gently close your eyes, please. Mentally scan your body part by part. Start from your feet. Move upwards to your knees and then your sitting bones and relax. Continue to move up your lower spine or lower back to your upper back and just relax. Maybe remember what an expert you are in relaxation by just thinking what happens every night when the muscles of your body relax. The difference here is that we relax the body, but our mind becomes incredibly aware. Go to your chest and your belly and relax. The back of your neck, the head, top of your head, and try to bring some relaxation there. Both of your shoulders, both of your upper arms, and then the lower arms and the palms. Relax. Please relax your shoulders a little bit more. tension. Just imagine it sinks or moves easily in the direction of the ground. Your forehead, relax. The other muscles in the face, relax. The inside of your mouth, the tongue, the lower jaw, relax. Appreciate for a moment now your entire body is very nicely relaxed and you are in there waiting for the meditation. We start by watching our breath. When you inhale through the nose, notice how you are inhaling. Just pay attention to the ingoing breath. And whenever you exhale, as you do in your natural rhythm, stay with the breath. Remain with the breath. All your thinking, all your awareness is now with your breath. Should thoughts come or let them come, let them go, but pay them no attention. Just bring your mind back to your in and outgoing breath. Note how your mind settles into a feeling of peace and calm. Now, please draw your attention into the region of the heart. This is done most easily by breathing in and following this flow into the heart region. Whenever you breathe in, breathe in, so to say, to your heart. Try to lengthen your inhale softly and gently, not forcibly. And each time you breathe out, tell yourself, relax a little bit more. Deep heart breaths. Now withdraw your attention gently from whatever is going on in your life. Let everything go for a while. Your job and your achievements. Gone. Your possessions and your titles. Gone. Your worries and your concerns, let them also go. Gone. Your various relationships. Gone. Your body. Arrive at the state of simply being. From being free from all the layers that are put on top, that simple state of simply being.
Thing is
do the spiritual practice of singing from this space. I'll sing the lead voice, and then whenever I'm finished, please sing, you know. And again, I will sing, and in this way it will go back and forth. Krishna. Give yourself time to return to room awareness. We will end with a little reflection. Who are you? Are you your name? Are you your virtues or sins? Your deeds and achievements? Will any of these live your life for you? Your hands or legs, your brain or heart, your innermost thoughts, your secret moods, are you your body or mind, or are you inside them? Look back at your life. See yourself as a child with toys, a teenager with many questions, a young adult with an education and an apartment. to the future and see yourself growing old. With the tired body of an old man or woman, your many roles have changed over time. But throughout these changes, you have always been there. Who is that you? From childhood to youth to old age, your body has changed many times. But you have been there throughout. Who is that you? I thank you very much for participating. When we make such journeys, you could say, or meditations in a like-minded company, it is possible that we uplift ourselves, inspired by the atmosphere, and for a brief moment we might have we might be able to reflect, yes, who am I? And everything that is not me falls away. We might have an inkling. It's almost as if the door to a dark room in which we are is opening for a moment, and through the crack of the door, light falls and well, my dear everyone, whether this worked for you tonight or it did not work for you does not matter so much. What matters is even the briefest insights which you might have that has cleared your doubt in yourself, you know, I mean your new word, self, or even those who have gone in the meditation further than the guided tour was in God, that we need to stabilize these insights. They should be daily there. They should be always with us. They should not be brief flashes of insights. No, they should be there. It should be like the Gita describes this state. That which pervades the entire body. You should know. To be indestructible, no one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. Not even the taxi driver in New York who gives you back too little change. You become undisturbed. And further, you come to this state for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me. I'm never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. There are no doubts which come in between the understanding of the undisturbed, free self and the Supreme Self. That is all there. It is your natural, inborn nature as the living being that you are, the living force that goes through you, to come to this uncovered state. Good, I have reached my And I mean, now I could start really, but I don't have the time. Thank you so very much. Very wonderful community, really. You could see by the atmosphere here, one can feel it. And Pamela was there. Yes. Yeah, well, it is very nice that we can do such things. And you have also been very nicely prepared for meditations like this through the become.
Remembering who we are.
Remembering who you are. I always say become who you are because Friedrich Nietzsche, the man from my village, said it, you know. So remembering who you are. Good. Now the question is, to where do we go from here?
Maybe just take a few questions and then more can be personally.
Yes. Are there immediate questions which you would like or things you would like to say? I have a question. Did you also experience to get out of the stage and I say, rub your hands and you already know, and I say the word New York, oh no. Then one is slightly unwilling, not why, this is a good place to stay. Don't stop. did some of you feel that as
yes,
well?
Yes.
I always say at the end of my meditation, I mean, after everything is done, it's good if you hate me, then I bring you out, that means you may in. Good. Fine, so.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm finding the isolation. I've moved far away, I live on a farm in the middle of nowhere, and I find the isolation, no satsang, it's challenging. Do you have any advice for how to maintain sadhana in that sort of situation?
Yeah. Question I would like to repeat is, do you have any idea how to maintain spiritual practice when one is isolated and does not receive these inspirations from others? See, you need to end isolation in whatever situation you are, isolated with many people around you, like New York. Sometimes you feel very alone, isolated in your working place, or isolated in the midst of, what was it, Midwest, Minnesota maybe? That's not with us. And you need to end isolation. And there are various ways in which we can do so. Even when we are on the farm, there is now the curse of civilization, the internet, which is giving you also a lot of spiritual problems. Satsangs, lectures, even following along spiritual practices. But from time to time, it's good to speak to living people. It's good to close the computer with all the windows on the galleries, you know, galleries, all the people. And it is good. Because in true Sangha, being together, something happens that is beyond words. Energetically, it is described that during this time there is communication, for instance, on the heart level. You know? Many other levels which become activated when you sit before a living person. So therefore, at least phoning, but sometimes you may have to take take your horse from the farm and ride in gallop to where there is good association. Yes. Good. I think we all suffered during lockdown, and we knew how it's time to get association. Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Then I would say, yes, here, this will be the last question, yes?
You use the term spiritual experiences a few times. I'm wondering if you can clarify, is it the experiences of some other place, in some other realm, or do these experiences also filter into our daily life in terms of, I guess, like, what are the range of spiritual experiences that one might be able to access?
Yeah.
Because, of course, what you shared was a very profound story, but maybe all of us won't get that experience in our lifetime. So how do we...
I don't really also wish that everyone needs to go to the surgeon's table and so on. Yes, I totally understand. Have you all understood this very beautiful question? We will end after this. I'm so grateful that you asked this question, really. I wanted to talk about it, but then I felt, oh, time. Time is also there. Very generally, there are three ways in which you can experience in this world, the world. The first is a material experience. The second can be both a material and a spiritual experience, and the third is a purely spiritual experience. The first experience is known in Sanskrit as adibhautik. You see the world composed of elements. Like now, I see this pillar, I see this industrial construction here of pipes going through the room. I hear in the back that preparations for your dinner is being made, sound vibration. I smell the most dreaded feature of American culture, that is AC, for me, for you it is good, wonderful, I wish. Long live the ACs for you, and so on. But I get always sick in the voice, you have heard, no? So these are all adibhautik experiences which I make through my eyes, through my various senses, like the nose, the ear, the everything, no? I take in material elements which are there, in various combinations. I see you, I see the colors of your dress. Michael has a blue shirt today. I see the expression of your faces and so on. Mm. Then there comes the second level. It's called the adiatmic level. It's more an energy level. I, for instance, see, although I see Pamela is known to me since many years. I see, for instance, that although Pamela's face is covered, which is good in this situation, I'm not saying anything else, but I can feel she looks at me with joy, I think. Oh, finally, after many years, I can see. It's an energetic thing. Yes, someone can look like, as if they smile, but you can feel energetically they don't smile at you, they hate you, but they have to smile due to social convention. You feel more an energetic perception of reality. This was there are energetic perceptions beyond, for instance, let us call it the energy of a person or the inner intentions of a person. There can be very spiritual energies can be felt, like divine love and so on. But then there is a pure purely spiritual level of understanding that is called the Adi-Devic level. And I would like to give you a most mind-boggling example. When you go to the river Ganga, on one level, it's H2O. Do you have this in America also? This name? Water, no? H2O. It's made of, is it molecules, really? No? Two molecules. On another level, and my dear people, this is something for you to explore. It is spiritual energy, and you feel it. You come into this water, and although it may be physically cold, you feel, my God, something is going on. It is true. The Ganga takes away a burden from you, which is known as karma. No, you must have heard in the past. But then there is still another level where you see the river as a divine goddess. That's the Adiyak, no, the Adi-Devic level. So every perception in this world can be on one of the these levels. Of course, there are sub-levels, but let's not get lost in philosophy, which is not relevant at this stage for us. You can have a material perception, you can have an energetic perception, you can have a purely spiritual perception of reality. And spiritual, and these are experiences, you asked about the level of experiences. So one material experience, then one which can be so or so, or and then a purely spiritual experience. Most people don't know about spiritual practice in such a loss. Imagine all of New York would do this type of practice and then chant mantras. You know, there would be no road rage anymore. Or less road rage, maybe only road rage from the very immature practitioners, you know. So it's such a gift to humanity, and it's free. Mm-hmm. Absolutely free. Let me make a New York comment. That sounds groovy, isn't it? Do we say like this and this? Not quite.
Maybe. Sometime back.
I'm a little late, come on to the special expressions. And therefore, my dear everyone, this will be the last public statement in this room for me. Please inquire about the relevant spiritual practice for you. It is not, I can't give it like this for one shoe fits all. No, inquire with those who like Rasanath, Hari Prasad, Bipin, Michael, and others. Yes, also we have a few exalted persons. You need to sit down really, and you need to say, I'm like this, what can, do you think? I have so much time, and you know, what would work for me best? No? And then you can go. But then you must, then it's good to commit to a regular practice. My dear everyone, this is, I will be staying here, but please, from the sound, it sounds like Divya's kitchen. It is. Divya is a prized culinary chef, and everything she cooks is not just good for this little gentleman, the tongue. No, it is good for the entire body. And there is a spiritual quality to her food which will give you wings to fly. So please, I think we all, you can go back there and You can meet also Divya. She has a very, very wonderful restaurant. I don't say this without reason. I was yesterday eating and I became totally satisfied, body, mind, and heart. Good.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Satchidananda Swami. This has been very moving for me, and I've waited 5 years. We've waited 5 years to be able to have you back in New York, and it means a lot. We really hope and pray that this is the first of many, many experiences with you, that you can guide us so much more deeply into our spiritual being.
It goes unlimitedly.
Yeah.
There is no limit. There is no limit. It goes unlimitedly deep. Yes.
And thanks to each of you for showing up and being with us. Really, it means so much. We're overjoyed. And we're also very grateful that we had a kind donor in our community who's made this event possible, who is anonymous. Very, very grateful for that spirit of service. And thanks to Divya's Kitchen as well, as Satchidananda Swami had said. And please do meet Divya. She's right back there. So all the best. Have a wonderful rest of the evening here. And you'll have your dinner and time with each other and with Satchidananda Swami. Thank you very much.